from the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, Welcome to Life and Law. Christine Field lives smack dab at the intersection of life and law. She is an attorney, former homeschooler, mom to four, author, speaker, prolific writer, and married to a cop. She has served as a criminal prosecutor, private practitioner, and worked for a non-profit Christian legal service provider. Her husband serves as the police chief in Wheaton, Illinois, where they reside. With a cop and a lawyer in the family, you can imagine the dinnertime conversations. Each week on Life and Law, Christine will discuss the law as it relates to homeschoolers and the things they care about. Let's talk about it, today on Life and Law. Now, here's your host, Christine Field.
Hello and welcome. This is Life and the Law, where each week we get together to talk about homeschoolers, the law, and the things that homeschoolers care about. I'm your host, Christine Field, and thank you for joining us again this week. We said we were going to talk about homeschooling law in particular this week, and there's not a great deal to talk about because there aren't any huge controversies or big cases specifically involving homeschooling right now. And personally, I don't see any big challenges to homeschooling coming down the pike. I don't think that there's anything imminent that's going to come and derail homeschooling or any big regulation that's going to make homeschooling suddenly illegal. Homeschoolers are an organized group, and when things are proposed, as we talked about in the story last week about the Ohio legislation, people get activated and motivated and challenge legislation that would not be favorable to homeschoolers. So I don't see any huge challenge right now. Besides, can you imagine our government if we were to dump 2.5 million kids at the doorsteps of the public schools? I'm not sure they'd be equipped to handle it along with everything else that they're handling these days. So regarding homeschool law, there are a couple of thoughts here. First of all, you need to know the law. Obviously, you can't follow the law unless you know it. And it's a good idea every year to check out if there have been any changes or changes in regulations and to just keep up on what's going on with your state. As we said last week, every state is different. Some states require notice, some don't require any kind of paperwork or documentation from you. Some states require you to test or to send in evaluation forms. A few require you to keep attendance records. So keep up on what's going on in your state and know exactly what is required of you. Next, obviously you want to follow the law to the best of your ability. I respect all types and kinds and ways of homeschooling, styles of homeschooling, but the reality is that you have to do the work. You have to have your kids doing the work, progressing, and moving forward with their education. I had a call once from a lady who had lost her husband, and for a whole year, they did no homeschooling. And it was hard to tell her, and certainly in the middle of her grief, to put another burden on her, but you can't do that. You can't just not educate your kids for a year and call it homeschooling. So you have to know the law, and then you have to follow it to the best of your ability. Next, you want to homeschool your children with excellence. You want to be able to demonstrate the fact that your child is being educated. And we all know that homeschoolers are getting a far better education than other students, but you need to do the work. 2 days a week is not homeschooling. And finally, I'm really big on keeping records. I think it's very important to keep records at the end of the year. So many of us are tempted to just put the papers away, but it's very important that we keep a paper record of what we've done with our children. Number one, it's the only record that will ever exist of their schooling, of their accomplishments, of their grades, of their attendance. It's not like if the child attended a traditional school, you send in $5 for a transcript. Indeed, you have to prepare that transcript and be prepared to back up what that transcript represents. And the way to do that is to keep excellent records. Now, we know it's not really a cost factor for record keeping. There's lots of free online places to keep records. I used to love the site DonnaYoung.org, and it is still up. She has a large variety of record keeping sheets and forms that are just fabulous. So cost should not be a factor. And one reason why I'm so big on keeping records is I knew a family once whose children were extremely well educated. I mean, they had, you know, read all the great books and done all the math classes and were extremely bright. But mom never kept any records. She was extremely bright herself, but dived into the learning and didn't keep records. Well, one of the kids wanted to get a job somewhere where he had to have a transcript. And mom scrambled to try to remember what had been done the last 4 years. And indeed, the job ended up questioning the transcript, and it did not end well for this particular young man. So keep good records. It's something that we owe our children, and we owe them for their future so that they will be able to transition to college or whatever they want to do flawlessly. There are lots of other ways that homeschooling touches on the law. We are going to have a separate program on sports and homeschoolers, special needs homeschoolers, homeschoolers participating in other extracurricular activities, Common Core, things like that. So stay tuned, look at the schedule and see what's coming up. And if it's a topic of interest on the law as it relates to homeschoolers, tune in. A couple of interesting stories in the news this week that touch on or directly concern homeschoolers. One of them concerns a Catholic enrichment group. Now, many of you, and I was involved in a co-op and an enrichment program several times through the years and enjoyed that very much. And this story is a caution to be very careful about how you conduct their business. In this particular case, it took place in Indiana, and a group member, one of the moms who was involved, insisted that her daughter be served a special dinner prepared at a local hotel where the group was holding a social event. They were going to have a ball. She was fearful because her daughter was allergic to a lot, and she feared that her daughter would have a reaction to the group's planned chicken dinner. But the group, in trying to accommodate this special need, said, well, mom, why don't you prepare and bring a non-allergic meal from home so you can be assured that your child won't be exposed to anything that she's allergic to, which is sounds like a very reasonable expectation. But mom did not take this well, and indeed a lot of fighting ensued. In fact, she went behind the back of the leaders and talked to the people at the hotel and generally caused a lot of trouble. Now, the end result of it was they asked this particular mom to leave the group. They asked her to resign based on her difficult conduct and not negotiating the situation with them. So what this mom did was she filed a complaint against that group, claiming that they discriminated against her daughter in the meal offered at the ball. And the state of Indiana prosecuted the group under the Indiana Civil Rights Act. And it turns out the Thomas More Legal Society stepped forward to provide representation for them. In any event, after several years of litigation, and I remember hearing about this case 4 years ago, the disability discrimination claim related to the meal choice was dismissed by an administrative law judge. However, the judge allowed the retaliation claim to proceed. Now, remember, that was based on the dismissal of the member from the group. The judge ordered that the families readmit the expelled family and pay a fine. This case, this court was appealed to the appeals court, which affirmed that judge's decision. And then the appeals court has taken this case up to the Indiana Supreme Court. Now, interesting, as this moves to the Supreme Court, the Civil Rights Commission has dropped any persecution of the society, the group, the enrichment group. But the case proceeded when this mom hired a private attorney to continue her prosecution of the case against the enrichment society. So, interesting case and a sad case. As many people who run support groups or enrichment groups pour their lives into these groups, and I know how hard they work. If you are the administrator of such a group, my heart goes out to you. I know how much you put into it. And traditionally, groups who wanted to protect themselves from these types of claims could file to be a formal nonprofit corporation. The idea being that if that nonprofit is ever sued, then recovery would be limited to the assets of the nonprofit. They wouldn't be able to touch your personal assets, your house, your bank accounts, and so on. So in this group, I'm not sure if they are incorporated or not, but it looks like they're continuing this case. And now this case is interesting on a lot of grounds. It's something that all people who are involved in support groups, enrichment groups, co-ops, should keep an eye on. To what extent do groups have the right to determine who can keep maintain membership? For example, if you have a member who is very disruptive, constantly breaking the rules, things like it sounds like this mom was, what is your authority over dismissing that person? Will you be challenged with a retaliation claim if you do the right thing for the group? So the case raises a lot of interesting questions. I know it was argued in front of the Indiana Supreme Court a couple days ago. And if you look up the Thomas More Legal Society, I think you'd be able to listen to those arguments, which were pretty interesting. So if this is of interest to you, follow through on it. I'll put a link on the website. The next story I read is called Why Some People Don't Like Homeschoolers. And this one was funny. Obviously, I think this was a secular mom who had recently pulled her child out of public school, and she cannot understand why there is such overwhelming negative sentiment among homeschoolers about public school. She says, I chose to homeschool, so why do I care about public school? A homeschooler's view on public education matters because we're all in this together. And I read this article and I felt a little bit of conviction. I myself have said I could never send my kids to public school and have spoken negatively against public schools, even though we live in an area that has many fine public schools. And I was forced to eat my words when my husband became ill 4 or 5 years ago. He had cancer and I was working full time. And so we did put our last two kids into public school. So I guess this story is a cautionary tale. Well, you know, why do we need to say negative things about the public schools? Let's just focus on the positives and the good results obtained by homeschoolers. And in the process, we don't have to bash anyone else or offend anyone else, frankly. So this was a good story for me to read and reminded me that sometimes it's best to just not comment negatively on things like this. There's a story out of New York about tracking and classifying our children from pre-K to college. It's called the P20 program. The New York State Education Department is in the final stages of creating a system to share student data with colleges and a half dozen other state agencies, so that New Yorkers can be tracked from preschool to college to the workforce and potentially, quote, throughout their lives, end quote. Read this and immediately thought of Big Brother wondering why this would be in the news now. Why is there a push for this? Does this correlate with some of the goals of the Common Core movement? And what is their rationalization for it? Well, let's see. The state officials say the new system will let researchers find the keys to student achievement and failure. For example, what does pre-kindergarten background say about the likelihood of success in high school? How did college students who fail science do in middle school? What are the links between applying for unemployment benefits as an adult and one's educational history? And of course, the rhetoric is that they want to make the education programs better. I think they want to make the education programs more intrusive. And so this P20 program is going to be the next ultimate intrusion. The thing that concerns me, other than just the idea of a government agency tracking your children, is that the information, it says, will be shared with a half dozen other state agencies. Now, what will those state agencies be? Will they be shared with the state healthcare agency? Will they be shared with the gun registry agency? Will they be shared with social welfare agencies? I just can't see anything good coming out of this that would serve to preserve our privacy and our right to not have our information shared. So something to follow in New York, and probably coming to your state soon, along with the March of Common Core. Interesting that there are so many stories in the news about Common Core, that states are rising up against it, but everywhere you go, it seems to be in use. So we'll see what happens with this one. A couple of those funny but sad kind of stories in the news this week. One was about a political prankster whose name is Mark Dice, and he has once again documented how many young Americans are completely disconnected from reality, capturing California college students signing a fake petition to imprison all legal gun owners in concentration camps and even to have them executed. I don't know about you, but I don't like it when someone approaches me with a survey or to sign something, because if I'm going to take a stance on something, I'm going to have done it long before someone approaches me in a parking lot or on a college campus. So this is not the way I make my decisions, but apparently maybe this is how some young people do make their decisions. Again, he's playing a prank, but what the things that he said were, we just want to make sure we disarm the citizens. We can trust the government to be the only ones with the guns. And he stated that many students on this particular campus in San Diego unquestionably signed the petition to repeal the Second Amendment. Dice told them, these peasants don't need guns. We want to put all registered gun owners in prison. One student even replied, yes, it's just too dangerous for people to own guns. So funny, but very sad. You wonder how much these kids were taught to look into issues before they take a stand. Certainly, perhaps this was the first time this particular student had given the Second Amendment any thought at all, and he's approached to make a split-second decision and is not really listening to what the person is saying, and actually signs a petition to have gun owners executed in concentration camps. My goodness, I hope we're all educating our children to have a little more discernment than that. Just a little break here. If you'd like to visit my website, it is www.realmomlife.com. There you can link to get my books and my published books and my ebooks and learn more about me. I have published books on a variety of topics, obviously homeschooling, adoption, leaving the workplace, life skills for kids, whole bunch of things. So if you'd like to learn more, go to realmomlife.com, sign up for my mailing list. I've always got something interesting to say, hopefully. And if it's wasting your time and if it's not interesting, just unsubscribe. So I have that project going, and I'm working on another project for Empty Nest Moms. It is called thirdactmoms.com. And I'm hoping to build that up to really bless moms whose children are grown and who are looking at what's going to come next in the next season of their lives. For homeschoolers, kind of the concept of life beyond the jumper. So come visit me on one of my websites, and I look forward to seeing you there. At a high school in Colorado, the student council thought it would be a good idea to kick off the week by celebrating America and have students dress in patriotic colors. They called it America Monday. So when they proposed their idea to school officials, they were turned down. One student council member said they didn't want to offend anyone from other countries or immigrants. They just really did not want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. And another member of the student council stated they said they didn't want to be exclusive to any other country. The student council then offered an alternative to the administrators of My Country Monday, where it would be opened up so that all students could participate. School district said, nah, they're not sure. The students pointed out it's pretty inconsistent that other students are allowed to plan theme days like Pajama Day and Twin Day. But then the students pushed this idea of extending it to My Country Monday, and the administrators agreed. This theme day would allow the students to showcase their pride in America, and for international students, their country of origin. One wise 16-year-old student council member commented, "It's shocking. There are men and women fighting for our country, and we should be able to celebrate and be proud that we live in a country where we are allowed to vote, the right to free speech. They won't even let us celebrate it." Well, shortly after the school received a call from Fox News, the school administrator announced that, "Okay, you can go ahead and have My Country Monday." However, the Monday was half over by the time the announcement from the administration was made. So, fascinating story, again, that an educational institution would prohibit a student in this great country from celebrating this great country. Again, this story is out of Colorado, and I'll link to it in the notes. Have you ever played the game Cross the Line? Middle school students in Wisconsin get kids to snitch on their parents. The game is called Cross the Line, and many outraged parents believe that it does just that. A middle school in Wisconsin got a group of 5th to 8th graders together and organized a fun game in which they asked students to step forward to answer yes to a series of very personal questions like, "Do your parents drink? Do you cut yourself? Has anyone in your family been to jail? Have you ever wanted to commit suicide? Do you or your parents do drugs?" The administrators thought that the game would help the kids to be better and kinder to one another, to build stronger, more respectful relationships among the students. Of course, when some parents got wind of this, they were upset, and in negotiating with the principal, the only concession the principal made was that they would let the parents know the next time they plan on playing the game. Well, I can just see this situation going in a direction that no one would want it to go to. You can imagine playing the Cross the Line game, asking children what their parents' lifestyle choices are, what their lifestyle choices are. Are they forced to go to church? Are they Democrats or Republicans? Or has the student had mental health issues? Step forward, cross the line if you've been depressed. Just another scary example of a school district crossing the line to get personal information out of kids. And, you know, and kids don't understand what the consequences might be for sharing this type of information. Kids don't understand that they might be exposing themselves and their families into a social service investigation. And frankly, it's really overreaching by the schools to do this. So I can't imagine allowing my child to take part in this or not allowing them to opt out from it. But such is the nature of public schools today. It's a positive story in the news that the abortion rate is at the lowest rate it's been since Roe versus Wade. There were fewer than 17 abortions for every 1,000 women in 2011. And that's down 13% from 2008 and a little higher than the rate in 1973 when the Supreme Court handed down Roe versus Wade. It's a cause to celebrate that abortion has hit this lowest rate. And I wonder if it isn't because of medical technology. We are allowing potential moms to see the baby forming in the womb, and that's making it a much more difficult decision for her to make. So perhaps we can thank the developments of science for the lowered abortion rate. Pray for these babies that every year we are just destroying in the millions. A story out of Chile is kind of sends a chill down my spine. It's captioned, "Not a woman's body after all. Teen mother sells unborn baby via Facebook, but gets arrested." Can you imagine that? And the story reads, "So someone explained to me how a pregnant woman has the right to abort her child and yet can get arrested for selling the unborn baby on Facebook." That we wonder, is this just kind of a logical extension of where we're going here? But in this particular case, this happened in the nation of Chile, where abortion is legal, just like it is in the United States. And an 18-year-old woman found out she was pregnant, and along with her sister and her mom, put the unborn baby up for sale on the social networking site Facebook, and it of course immediately attracted interest from a couple. However, the parties could not negotiate a deal. The family then got in touch with the police and allegedly told the authorities what was going on. And in U.S. currency, all the mom wanted was the equivalent of a whopping $100 in exchange for the baby. So the people involved were arrested. And all we can do is hope that this unborn baby finds a little better shot at life than the one that her mom was going to give her by putting her up for sale on Facebook. Sad times. Finally, a little story. It seems so small, but it's interesting and empowering. I don't know if you remember hearing a few months ago about a judge in Tennessee who wouldn't allow the parents of a child to name their child Messiah. The judge said, no, you can't do that. That's disrespectful. You can't be allowed to do that. Well, a complaint was filed against this judge, and she has been charged with ethics violations, and she has been removed from the bench. So she could not tell the parents what they could or could not name their child, and indeed was removed from the bench for trying to do so. So you see judges trying to do goofy things. So maybe it's a goofy thing to want to name your child Messiah. I don't know. But sometimes they are called on them, and they are called on the carpet, and they are called to pay for their actions and their misdeeds. So there is hope. There's always hope. As long as the Lord is the Lord of the universe, there is always hope. And I hope that you feel that way too. Until next time, this is Christine Field. Love completely, serve wholeheartedly, and honor God.
Be sure to tune in next week to Life and Law, where there is always something to talk about. Got a question for Christine, legal or other? Interested in sponsorship opportunities? Contact www.ultimatehomeschoolradionetwork.com. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.